Thank you so much for the opportunity to come back to Stern. It's definitely something that I've missed a lot over the past number of months, and I was busy vacationing in Hackensack Hospital. It's good to come back to see old friends and old Talmidim and Talmidot, and to learn together and to just reconnect through Torah, which is, I guess, how most of us know each other to begin with. So it's really a big schus to be here. And I want to speak about a topic that I think will very much resonate. I pitched it to a couple of people in the room, and it seems to be on target. You'll tell me at the end if it's something that you've been thinking about. Rashi in this week's parasha brings a Maimer Chazal. It's a well-known Maimer Chazal. It's a Talmud Yerushalmi and Maseches Yoma. It's Midrashim elsewhere. It says that when Moshe was constructing the Mishkan, Moshe went through a period of building the Mishkan and taking apart the Mishkan, and building the Mishkan and taking apart the Mishkan, and building the Mishkan and taking apart the Mishkan. And he did this for 7 days, building it, taking it apart. And then finally on the 8th day, Moshe built the Mishkan and he left it in place. And the question is why? Why did it have to be that way? Now we can't really get into it right now. The Yerushalmi in Maseches Yoma explains in a very technical halachic sense that it had to be this way. But for us, talking in Yanei Avodas Hashem, to think of what this means for us beyond the detailed halacha of the functioning of the avoda of the mikdash, of the Mishkan, and what does it mean for us? What's this message of the Mishkan being built and taken apart and built and taken apart? Something to think about. So I saw Rabbi Menachem Ganak printed a sefer called the Birchas Yitzchak, and he shares an idea that he had printed a couple years earlier in a YU Torah journal called the Beis Yitzchak in the 43rd volume. He says a beautiful, beautiful insight. Quotes from one of his relatives. He says, you know why Moshe had to build the Mishkan and take it apart and build the Mishkan and take it apart? He says, beautiful. He says, the Mishkan we know is a microcosm of the entire universe. The Mishkan was a miniature version of the entire Bria, of the entire universe. And therefore, just like the Medrash says, that when Hashem created the world, Hashem was bona olamos machrivan. Hashem built worlds and then dismantled them, and built worlds and then dismantled them, and built worlds and dismantled them. Different opinions of the Medrash, 974 worlds that Hashem created until he finally said, you know what, this one is good enough, we'll keep this one. So too the Mishkan, which is supposed to be a miniature, almost an instant replay of Briyas HaOlam, of creation of the world, has to follow the same pattern. Just like the world was built and taken apart, so too the Mishkan has to be built and taken apart. Beautiful insight. But what does it mean for us? So I think we've all heard the idea that a person is considered an olam katan. And many sources in Chazal, Medrash Tanchuma, Tikkuni Zohar, in Avos Dari Nasan, it says that everything you find in a person parallels something in the world. Every single thing you see in the world, you can find some type of parallel to something inside of you. A person is a miniature universe, an olam katan. And so too, a person is a miniature Beis HaMikdash. Everything that you find in the Mishkan, you also find within man. The Mishkan was supposed to be a microcosm, again, of man. And therefore, I think the message is as follows. And this is what I want to share with you today. The way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, the Mishkan has to be built this way. Through a process of building and taking it apart, and building and taking it apart, there's no other way about it. The same thing is true when it comes to building ourselves. When it comes to our Olam Katan, when it comes to the Mishkan inside of ourselves, the Shachanti B'socham, like the original plan, as Chazal understood, that Hashem wants to dwell inside each and every one of us, not merely to dwell in a building. It comes about through a process of bona olamos machrivan. A person has to understand there's a process. Life is a process of building oneself up, and then maybe having a setback, but then having the courage to pick yourself up again and to try again, and to build yourself up again and again and again and again. And I want to be very clear why I picked this topic. You know, I spend my afternoons in YU as a mashkiach, meeting with many of the young men in YU. And I have conversations with some of you in other contexts. And very often, at the stage that you're in life now, whether you just came back from Eretz Yisrael and started Stern this year or this semester, or you're finishing up, these years of your life, in many ways it's true about all of life, but Befrat, specifically, these years of your life are a time where a person can get very lost in the bona olamos machriv, in that struggle of trying to pick yourself up, of trying to define yourself, to shape your character, to decide what type of person am I, what type of Jew do I want to be. And then there's a setback. Something doesn't work out exactly as planned. And in that moment, a person has to decide, what am I going to do? Am I going to have the courage to pick myself up and build myself up again? Or am I going to allow this setback to destroy me? I'll paint a theoretical picture. Okay, entirely theoretical. Entirely theoretical. Imagine a young woman goes to Eretz Yisrael for a year, right, maybe a year and a half, maybe even two, If you're Zocha, how many people here went to seminary in Eretz Yisrael by a show of hands? Okay, a couple of you, great. I figured as much. So maybe at the end of that year, or if you were so privileged to have more than a year, right, maybe you had a conversation. It could be a conversation you had with a Rebbe or a teacher. It could be a conversation you had with a friend. It could be a conversation you had with yourself. It's the last night before you head back to America, right? And you're kind of taking in, assessing the entire process of that year. And maybe, again, theoretically, maybe you wrote a letter to yourself of like what you want to be, right? Theoretically. And you have this certain picture of where I am, of where I'm holding. And then a person comes back to America and you start college. And all of a sudden, some of those great lofty levels that a person had attained from being in a seminary, being in a yeshiva program, being an opportunity to be involved in Torah and mitzvos, of chesed, of just being totally immersed in ruchnias, all of a sudden things start to get a little shaky. All of a sudden, that which I thought I was, it's not so clear if I'm that anymore. And I can't tell you how many times I've had this conversation. A young man came into my office just this week with tears in his eyes. And he says to me, Rebbe, I have terrible news. I said, no, what happened? So he says, I missed Shacharis this morning. I didn't daven with the minyan this morning. So I said, no, go on. Yeah. So he said, but Rebbe, I didn't daven with the minyan this morning. I promised myself, right, this guy just came back from Eretz Yisrael. I promised myself I'm never going to miss minyan. I thought I was something, and now I'm starting to realize that I'm not that. So what's happening in that moment? What happens in that moment, right, when the Mishkan is being taken apart? Or that world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu built is all of a sudden starting to crumble a little bit. So a person has an unbelievable nisayon in that moment. You have to ask yourself, is this just a minor setback? And can I still strive to be the person that I wanted to be? Or should I give in to the Yetzirah that wants me to redefine myself and redefine my values and redefine who I think I am and who I want to be, to decide that, you know what? And this guy came into my office. He was basically saying, apparently I thought I was a person who's, you know, who's relevant to assume I can go to Minyan on a daily basis. Apparently I'm not that. So I said, why do you think that? Why do you think just because you messed up one time that all of a sudden now it's, you know, that world can't exist anymore? That there can't be an Aliyah after the Yerida? And that, I think, is so much the Nisayon that many of us are going through at various stages of life, but again, Befrat, at this stage of your life, where a person is trying to set a certain standard of living for oneself, and a person wants to live in a Torah-dic way, but how do we respond when we have that setback? What does a person do when all of a sudden there's a little bit of a crumbling of that building, of that Mishkan that a person was trying to build? Tonight's Rosh Chodesh Adar. And if you look at the Purim story, you learn an unbelievable lesson in this Yesod. Haman, we know, wanted perfection. Haman was a perfectionist. Haman was a control freak. Haman was exceptionally wealthy. He was exceptionally powerful. He had the masses, you know, at his feet, literally bowing before him. And yet, Haman decides that there's this one little Yiddel, this one little Jew, Mordechai, who refuses to bow down to him. And it breaks Haman. It destroys Haman. Haman should have said to himself, I have it great. Things are going well. I'm rising in power. I'm successful. The king trusts me, appointed me to be second in command. I have everything that a person could want. So many people would have been so envious of Haman's position in life. And yet, because there was one thing that was out of his control, there was one thing that didn't work out exactly as he wanted it. Unfortunately, for Haman, that was his unraveling. The whole thing collapsed. And that's why Chazal and the Gemara and Chulin ask a very strange and unusual question. The Gemara asks the following question. Where do we find a hint to Haman in the Torah? Haman's name, of course, appears many times in Megillas Esther. But the Gemara in Chulin says, Haman min ha-Torah minayin. Where do you find Haman in the Torah? Where do you find Haman in the Torah? Why do I need to find Haman in the Torah? And where would one find Haman in the Torah? And the Gemara's answer is very cryptic. The Gemara says, you find Haman all the way back at the beginning of Bereshis. Where do you find Haman? Hamin ha-Eitz. Hamin ha-Eitz. Hey, Mem, not Haman. Hamin ha-Eitz. What's the pasuk over there in Bereshis? Vayomer HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to Adam and Chava. Mihigid lecha ki eru mata. Who told you that you were unclothed? How did you come to that realization? Hamin ha-Eitz. Asher tzivisicha levelti ocham imenu achalta. Hamin ha-Eitz. From that tree, which I told you not to eat. Did you eat from that tree? Is it possible? Hashem asks rhetorically to Adam and Chava. So what's the connection? All the Sfarim are trying to figure out, why is the source for Haman in the Torah Hamin ha-Eitz? And the answer, I think, is very obvious. Rav Aaron Cutler explained this idea. Many other Sfarim explained this idea as well. And that is, Adam and Chava are the exact same story. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a magnificent world for them. He put them in Gan Eden. He gave them everything a person could desire. Baruch Yisra Bagashas. And Hashem says there's one tree. There's one tree that's not in your control. There's one tree that you can't do what you want with. And yet Adam and Chava weren't satisfied with what they had. They decided that if we can't have that one thing, then we can't be. That if I miss Minyan that one time, then it can't be. And if I promise myself I'm going to learn Torah every day, and I have a major midterm or a final, and I wasn't able to have my most spiritual day of my life, right? So what do I do with that? Does that destroy me? Is that the crumbling of my world? Or is a person able to say, I'm going to move past it. I'm going to be bigger than that. There's Alios and there's Yeridos in life. And that's the reality. That's the reality of our world. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, it wasn't that God couldn't get it right the first time. Hashem had to practice 974 times so he could figure out how to make the world. Hashem was teaching mankind there's going to be Alios and there's going to be Yeridos. And if you think that it's always going to be absolutely perfect and there's never going to be something that doesn't work out the way that you want, you're going to end up destroying yourself. You're living as an unrealistic person. You're living in a way that's going to be self-destructive. This is the way it's been since the beginning of time. There's an amazing comment the Nefesh HaChaim has. Shar Aleph, the Nefesh HaChaim is divided into four gates, four Sha'arim. In Shar Aleph, Perek Vav, there's a famous comment to the Nefesh HaChaim, but I saw a new part to it that I had never seen before just this week. The Nefesh HaChaim writes as follows. What was it like to be Adam, to be Chava, back in Gan Eden? What was their relationship like with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I mean, it was pretty clear that Hashem had created their world. Right? How could it be that they fell into the traps of the Yetzer Hara? How could they fall for the tricks of the Nachash? What was their relationship with evil in the world? Seems that everything was obvious of what to choose. Says the Nefesh HaChaim in a comment, in a footnote, in an addendum, to Shar Aleph Perak Vav, Ki kodem achi, im ki vadei shehaya ba'al bechira gamur. It's true that before the sin, of course Adam and Chav had free will, but it's not like the free will that we have. It was a different setup of how they made choices. They could choose whatever they want. La'ativ, or lehefech, chas v'shalom. They could choose to do good, they could choose to do bad. But you know what it meant to choose to do bad? It's very hard to understand. How did Adam and Chava sin? They didn't have a Yetzer Hara. Says the Nefesh HaChaim, Amnam lo sha'i'in b'chirasso machmas shekocha sara hayeklulim b'socho. It's not that they had this evil force inside of them. The Nachash was trying to convince them to rebel against God so you can also be godlike is outside of them. It's an outside force that's trying to be mashpia upon them, that's trying to impact them. So it's not like our struggle where we have this inner voice that's trying to get us to make those bad decisions. It was entirely outside of them. V'kochos hara hayu omdim letzad, v'inyin b'fnei atzam chutz mimenu. The Yetzer existed outside of a person. So what does it mean that a person had free choice? Says Rav Chaim Volozhiner. He says, what does it mean to choose bad? It's the same way that nowadays we would think to choose entering into a fire. You could choose that. You could walk into a fire. It's not a very easy choice. And that was the relationship with negativity, with anything that was evil. It was outside of them. It was difficult for them to make that choice. How in the end Adam and Chava fell into that trap is a good question. The Mefarshim were trying to figure out. If the scales were so deeply, you know, strongly tipped in one direction, that internally, there was an internal drive to do what's right. And it was only this small outside voice trying to tell them otherwise. So how did it happen? How did they give in to that outside voice? It's a very good question. But says the Nefesh HaChaim, what happened when they gave in to that outside voice? What happened when the Nachash that was outside of them, they invited the Nachash in to be a part of their world? The whole system got flipped on its head. Vina hafachu. The whole world got overturned. Uvecheto shenimshach achar pito yesetra achra. When they gave in to the lure of the Yetzer Hara, oz nisarvu akochos hara besocho mamish. That which was once outside of them, now dwells within us. And that's why it is hard to make the right choice nowadays. Because the Yetzer Hara is not some outside force. It's something internal. It's inside of us, mamish, says the Nefesh HaChaim. V'chein b'ha'olamos. And that's how the world got flipped on its head. It used to be the world's a beautiful place and people made good choices. That was the intention of Kadosh Baruch Hu had for the world. But when Adam and Chava sinned, the whole system got flipped. And now the world is not the greatest place. And to find those sparks of goodness in the world is a lot more difficult. It's much harder to see. V'zeo eitz hadas tovara. And he says, that's what it means. Eitz hadas. The word das in Tanakh often means attachment, connection. Eitz hadas tovara means if you eat from this tree, there's going to be this terrible blurring of the lines. That while it was once clear that Tov is my inner voice, and Ra is sort of this outside force trying to maybe convince me, when you eat from this tree, there's going to be this attachment of Tov v'Ra. And that is our world. Why am I telling you this? Because he says an amazing thing. He says what that means for us practically is that anytime you try to do something good, there's going to be an element of Ra to it. There's not going to be perfect. The world will not be perfect till Mashiach comes. There's going to be an element of Ra that attaches itself to everything of good that you try to do. So what happens when a person decides, I'm going to do something, and it's going to be perfect, and it's going to be exactly like this, and all of a sudden it doesn't work out perfect. Something's not right. And a person's broken by that. They feel so frustrated. Maybe this was a terrible idea. It wasn't a terrible idea. You weren't way off. But this is the reality of our world. Bona olam usamach rivan. That there's a reality of imperfection in the world. And he concludes by explaining a pasuk in Koheles. A pasuk that we're all familiar with. Ki odam ein tzadik ba'aretz sher yaseh tov velo yechta. There's no tzaddik in the world who does only good and never sins. Says the Nefesh HaChaim, I'll tell you a new pshat in how to read the pasuk. It's not that you're going to have good days and you're going to have bad days. It's that the tzaddik, when he's osek in maisa tzidkos, when he's doing good things, yi'efsher shelo yeh al kol panim ktzat chisaron b'maisa tov atzma she'osek. When you're doing something good, there's going to be something that's just not perfect. That's the reality of our world. And we can fall into the trap of being like Haman. We could take that Amalek attitude, where I want to be completely in control of my life, and I want everything to work out exactly the way that I want it to work out. Or a person could say, you know what? I'm doing the right things. I'm striving in the right direction. There's going to be ups and there's going to be downs. But I'm going to push ahead. And I'm going to find a way to make sure that the ups outweigh the downs in life. Now this past week's Parsha, Parsha Mishpatim, the Zohar makes a very interesting comment. The Zohar says, Parsha Mishpatim is the secret of Gilgal. The secret of reincarnation. This is the Seder, this is the Parsha that describes the Raza de Gilgula, the secret of reincarnation. There's a lot of different opinions about reincarnation. It seems to be something that certainly is accepted by the Jewish people, although again, there were amongst the Rishonim who questioned the authenticity of such a notion. But what is Gilgul? You think about Gilgul, you think spooky stuff, right? You think a soul that was once here and didn't fulfill its purpose and it comes back to this world. Right? That's true. That's Pashut Pshat in Gilgul. A person lives a long life. They had an almost perfect life. It wasn't exactly perfect. So then the neshama, the person passes away. And then there's a child born in the family. And the child takes the name of that grandfather, or great-grandfather, or grandmother, whatever it is. And that child carries that neshama to try to bring it to its tikkun. That's classically how we understand the concept of Gilgal. But I saw an amazing comment from Rav Avram Tzvi Kluger Shlita, one of the great mashpiyim in Eretz Yisrael today. In his Sefer Asicha B'chukecha, this past week's Parsha, on page 226, he says an amazing thing. He says, it's true, that is Gilgal. That is Gilgal. And Hashem was here, it wasn't perfect, it has to come back to finish the job. He says there's a totally different way to look at Gilgal. And it's a lot less spooky, and it's a lot more practical to our day-to-day lives. Maybe a person can say, Gilgal, so what, I lived a previous life, and so what does that mean for me now? Says Rav Kluger, there's a totally different way to come out of this past week's Parsha as we transition now towards Chodesh Adar, towards Purim. A different way to look at the concept of Gilgal. Like Gilgal, things being overturned, but Hafachu, it's very much connected to Purim. Says Rav Kluger, but how should we look at Gilgal? Shel Gilgulim Einam Rak La'achar Chaim Shleim. Gilgal doesn't have to be, and it's not only something that happens at the end of a life. That a person finishes their life, they come before Kadosh Baruch Hu, they negotiate a package deal, maybe a little Olam Haba, a little Gehenna, maybe a little Gilgal, right? You work out some type of arrangement with Hashem, and Hashem figures out what to do with your soul. That's true. But he says there's another way to look at it. Gilgal is not only something that comes after one's life. That you were here once and then you come back again. That's one way to look at it. Rav Kluger is describing what he refers to as Gilgulim besochachai. Gilgulim within one's life. I've been a lot of different people in my life. It's an amazing point if you think about it. Right, what I was when I was 5 years old, when I was 10 years old, when I was 15 years old, when I was 20 years old, they're totally different people with totally different values. Besides that, they physically look totally different. Right? They think different, they act different, they desire different things. We live many lives over the course of our life. Says Rav Kluger, Sharei roe tekufas u'ma'avarim b'chayiv. There are many stages of one's life. Sheish tekufa tova, v'yish tekufa shvela. There are ups and there are downs. There are good times and there are low points. V'tzarech leidah she'enu chai chayim shleimim she'orcham shmona v'tishim shana. And therefore, says Rav Kluger, it's almost inaccurate to look at your life as sort of this one long thing. In which case, if I thought I was something and now I start to become something else, so that the whole thing falls apart. Says Rav Kluger, there's a lot of different versions of you. There's the ideal version of you. And then sometimes you play a different Gilgal. You're a different version of yourself. But that doesn't have to be the only version of yourself. You can redefine yourself. You can recreate yourself. And a person has to find ways that the ups, those moments of Tov, outweigh those moments, those low points of one's life. I saw an amazing insight in the Sefer Chochmas Chaim from Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. Sefer Tzadik Kadosh Shel Racha from Yerushalayim. Rav Zonnenfeld says an amazing thing, just a simple insight into the world. He says, when it comes to Alios and it comes to Yeridos, he says, a Yerida in this world can only go so far. In the physical world. You're standing on top of a mountain. And you're overlooking this deep cavern, right? And a person jumps off the mountain. You may fall for a long period of time, but at some point there's a bottom. There's a bottom to the Yerida. The Yerida comes to an end. What about Aliyah? What about Aliyah when it comes to going up? Do we have any sense of there's only so high a person can go? There's an outer edge of the universe, right? Science is still trying to figure out what's beyond, and what's beyond that, and what's beyond that, and what's beyond that. So he says, when it comes to Aliyos and Yeridos, the Yeridos are limited, and the Aliyos are endless. And I think it's such an important part to pick oneself up, to rebuild the Mishkan, to rebuild the world. A person feels, I fell again, and I fell again, and when am I going to stop falling? There is an end to the Yeridos, but we have to be courageous. We have to be willing to pick ourselves up. And we have to be willing to not redefine ourselves and say, you know what, everything I thought I was when I was at my peak in seminary or at whatever point of my spiritual career when I felt like I had my whole life figured out, and now I'm seeing that it's not so simple to live that way, and I start to redefine myself and give up on all those great aspirations that a person had, chas v'shalom, right? We have to move past that. We have to be able to pick ourselves up. And a malik's whole kalach is to knock us down and to keep us down. That's why all the Sifrei Chassidus say, if you look at the famous pasuk, Kisheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kam, that a tzaddik will fall many times to come and he'll get himself back up. All the Sfarim point out, the Imrayamis points this out, many other tzaddikim point this out. Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kam, the last letters, Sheva ends with an ayin, Yipol Alamid, Tzadik Akuf V'Kam Amem, is Sofei Tevos Amalik. Why? Because Amalik, with their cynical attitude that we see throughout the Torah, they always come and they always try to mock. And when you're on a high, when the Jews came out of Mitzrayim, Amalek said, you're not so high, you're not so great, you were just on the 49th level of Tumah, you can't change yourself so quickly, you're not worthy of Har Sinai, v'chulu, 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 and all those noises that Amalek represents, which again, according to Nefesh HaChaim, is not outside of us. We start to think that it's part of us, because it's entered us, we've allowed the Nachash into our lives. The Yitzhar is living within us. But a person who's bigger than Amalek understands that that's Amalek. And Sheva Yipol Tzad V'Kam, what the Pasuk is telling me to do, is that when I fall many times, I pick myself up again. You know, sometimes we make the mistake. Rav Huttner has a famous letter in the Igros Pachad Yitzchak, letter 128, Kuf Chaf Ches. And he describes a mistake that we often make, and that is when we read archival biographies of great Gedolim. Right? You read the biography of Rebbetzin Kanievsky. You read the life story of the Chazon Ish. And you see people who are just so perfect. And you wonder, how could I ever be like that? Says Rav Huttner an amazing thing. He says, you know what the problem is? We only look at the Gedolim and the Gedolim. We only see the people who we aspire to be like once they've become so great. But we didn't see the process. And he says something shocking. He says, the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim is known for what? For guarding his speech. Chafetz Chaim is the name of a Sefer. Right? The Sefer, the book about not speaking Lashon Hara, Shmir HaSalashon, Chafetz Chaim. Perfection in speech. And they say the Chafetz Chaim wasn't a quiet person. He knew how to talk, but he knew how to talk in the right way. That was the Chafetz Chaim. So says Rav Huttner, you look at the Chafetz Chaim and say he's an angel. He's not a human being. It's not shayach for me to ever dream to be anything like the Chafetz Chaim or anyone else who I look up to in my life. Says Rav Huttner, it's a big mistake. You're only seeing the end of the process. Do you know, he says, how hard the Chafetz Chaim had to work in order to become the Chafetz Chaim? Maybe he had a lot of setbacks also. Don't assume that he had it easy from the day he was born. He worked on himself. And there were ups and there were downs. There were mechsholim. There were nefilos. V'chulu, v'chulu. He goes on and on describing the Chafetz Chaim struggles. There's a part of us that doesn't even believe that. As I'm telling you, there's no, it's not true. It's the Chafetz Chaim. Come on. The Chafetz Chaim had struggles. He was a regular person. The answer is yes. The Chafetz Chaim was a regular person who knew how to pick himself up and to keep striving for greatness and to never take his eye off that prize, that desire of becoming who he wanted to be. And Rav Huttner says, I'll tell you the real pshat in the pasuk Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kam. Listen to what he says. Va'atipshim choshim. Foolish people think that what's the message of Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kam? That the tzadik falls seven times and gets up? Foolish people think ki kavanaso b'derech rabusa, that it's a praise of the tzadik that what? That afal pi sheva yipol tzadik, even though he fell so many times, mikol makom hukam, he got himself back up. That's a very good message. But Rav Huttner says, compared to the real message, that's the foolish way to understand it. That's too simplistic. That the tzaddik fell and he picked himself up? Anyone who has a spirit to fight should pick themselves back up. Says Rav Huttner, you know what the real pshat is? Aval chachamim yodim heitiv. But the chachamim, those who are wise, explain it as follows. Shakavana hi shemahus hakima shel tzaddik hu derech hasheva nefilos. That sheva yipol tzaddik, it was the falls of the tzaddik that helped him to come, to become so big, to rise up. His greatness didn't come from avoiding all pitfalls. It's unrealistic. That's life itself. The world was built that way. The Mishkan was built that way. That's the reality from the times of Gan Eden, of Adam and Chava making that initial mistake that brought the world to where we are today. That's the reality of the world. But the tzaddik takes advantage of those nefilos. He takes advantage of the yiridos, and he uses them to pick himself up, to become something great. And he quotes the pasuk so beautifully in Chumash, Vayaris kol asher asav yinei tov mod. You know what Chazal say on that pasuk? Hashem looked at his world, and Hashem said, tov mod, what a beautiful world. You know what the Medrash says on that pasuk? Tov ze yetzer tov. Tov ma'od ze yetzer hara. Tov ma'od yetzer hara. Yetzer tov is tov. Yetzer hara, oh, that's tov ma'od. That's tov ma'od. Medrash has funny lashonos. Misa, that's tov ma'od. What do these lashonos mean? Says Rav Huttner in his letter to this Talmud who wrote to him saying, Rebbe, I'm struggling, I'm falling apart. I thought I was something and now I'm not able to maintain it. Says Rav Huttner, my dear beloved student, I wish I could, please listen to what I'm murmuring into your ear, what I'm whispering into your ear. If you would have written me a letter saying, Rabbi, I'm doing great, I'm doing this mitzvah, I'm doing that mitzvah, I'm doing, my davening is this great, and my Ben Adam Chavero is this great, and my Kibbutz Av Ha'Em is this great, and you go on and on and on, praising all the great things you're doing, you know what I would have said to you? I would have said, I got a good letter. I would have said, Hayisi Omer Shekibalti Mecha Michtav Tov. I got a good letter. But you wrote me even a better letter. You sent me a Michtav that's Tov Ma'od. You know why? Because you described your struggles. Achshav Shemichtavecha Misaper Al Dover Yuridos Venefilos Vemichsholim. You're describing all of your setbacks. You know what I say to you? Tov Ma'od. You're going to be a big person. You know why? Because you're trying to figure out, how do I pick myself back up? How do I become the best version of myself through the Nefilos? Not to give up, not to reassess my whole life, and to say that I'm not worthy of being a great person because I messed up once or twice. To pick yourself up, to believe in the concept of Yurida Litzarech Aliyah, like the Svarim described. That a person sometimes has a setback in order to go up. It's a funny world, it's an Olam Hafuch, like the Gemara says. We're in an upside down world. That's the reality of the world. When the water was bitter a few parshios ago. So what did they do? They took a bitter stick and threw it into bitter water, and it became sweet. Does that make sense? That bitter and more bitter equals sweet? But that's exactly this idea. That sometimes the yirida, sometimes the setback, is what makes a person so great. HaKadosh Baruch Hu heals, the Medrash says, with the exact same thing that he afflicts with. Does that make sense to us? That something which hurts me can actually make me great? But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in all of these sources, is telling us, yes, that's exactly what it is. When Adam and Chava sinned, and Rashi says that they took the leaves from the tree, that the same tree they sinned with is the same tree that we're going to be mitaking with. Rashi is telling us exactly this idea. That there's going to be yiridos, but use the yirida to build yourself back up, to become a great person. Don't let a mullah convince you otherwise. In the sixth parak of Megillas Esther, Haman comes home, he's very frustrated, he's not sure, he seems to be losing more and more control, and he wants to be in control. Haman turns to his beloved wife and all of his beloved friends, and he tells them as kol asher karau, everything that's happening, mikra, things are out of his control. He's feeling very frustrated. So his wise friends and his dear wife tell him, if this person who you're struggling with, namely Mordechai, is in fact a Jew, you're in big trouble. You know why? You're not going to be able to overcome him. If you're going up against a Jew, if Mordechai is a real Jew, if he's a person who's worthy of the title that he's given to Megillas Esther, an Ish Yehudi, B'Shushan Abira, you don't have a chance. Why? Nafol Tipol Lefanav. And the Gemara says the following. What's Nafol Tipol? What's the double Lashon? Gemara Megillah Tazayin Amad Aleph. Why does it say Nafol Tipol, a double Lashon of falling? A double expression of falling apart. Says the Gemara, Darash of Yehuda Bar Ilai, Ki Nafol Tipol Lefanav, Shtei Nafilos Halalu Lama. What's the nature of these two nefilos, these two fallings, right? Nafol tipol. What's the nature of this double lashon? Amrulo, umazu meshula afar umeshula lekochav. They were saying to Haman, this nation that you're going up against, the Jewish people, they're meshula laafar. At times they're compared to the dirt, to the sand beneath our feet. Umeshula lekochav. At times they're compared to the stars. Nu, what does it mean? Kishahein yardin. When the Jewish people are down and out. When they're yored, when they're descending, when they're slipping away, yardin ad afa. When they're down, they're as low as the dirt beneath your feet. However, kishahein olin ad lekochavim. But when they're up, they reach mamish the highest heights. They reach the stars. Nice gemara, no? Kinafol tipol. When the Jews are down, they're down. When they're up, they're up. Last night, I thought of a very simple question. So why is that nafol tipol? Why is that two nefilos? It's a double. The Jews go in extreme directions. I understand, but one is an extreme yirida, one's an extreme aliyah. So why is that described as nafol tipol?
Shnei Nephilos, this double Nephilos. This nation is compared to the dirt and the stars. When they're yardin, they go hit rock bottom. When they're up, they reach the greatest heights. Why is that Nafol Tipol? But based on our footnote, we understand very well. Sheva Yipol Tzadik Vekam. It's not just that the tzaddik picks himself up. It's that the nefila itself is what helped the person reach those great heights. Now, faulty pole, the part that was down, was also something that really lifted a person up. And therefore, it's dafka, it calls it a nefila. Realize that the nefila itself can help you reach the stars. You can reach new madrigos. A person thinks, I had it so much better when I was just in Eretz Yisrael, and I had my teachers, and I had all the people around me, and it was just, I was in an environment where I was breathing the air of Eretz Yisrael, and now I'm sitting here in, you know, somewhere in Midtown Manhattan, and I'm trying to balance a million and a half things, and it's really hard. And it's really, I'm not going to be what I thought I wanted to be as a Jew, as an impactful Jew in the Jewish community and the world. And the answer is, you're wrong. Everything you thought you were, that was unrealistic. This is very realistic. And this is going to help a person establish their own greatness in this world. And that's why when we fight back against the Amalek, what do we say? Al Anisim, Yala Porkan. What do we say in celebration, in the victory over our enemies? On Chanukah and Purim, what do we recite? Al Anisim, Al Porkan, Al Gvuros, Al Chuos, Al Milchamos. That's from Shalom Shwadron in the Lev Shalom in Sefer Bereishis. He says, why do we mention Al Milchamos? I understand. Al Anisim, thank you Hashem for the miracles. Al Porkan, thanks for the salvation. Al Gvuros, thanks for giving me the strength. What's Al Milchamos? Thanks for the battles? I'd rather not have the battles. Says Rosham Shodron, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that what? That hopefully, if we're mature enough, if we understand the reality of the world, we're thankful Hashem that we understood that it's going to be a battle. And we didn't give up. And we were willing to engage in the battle. And we didn't run away. We weren't frightened by it. That's the nature of the Jewish people. That's the message of this week's Parsha. The Mishkan that has to be built and taken apart and built and taken apart. That's how it is. The holiest Kli of the Mishkan, the Aron. The Aron, the Heiliga Aron that goes into Kodesh Kadashim, the beautiful Aron that goes into the innermost place on planet Earth, the deepest connection to God. How is the Aron built? There's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara says in Yoma, Daf Ayin Beis, the Gemara says that a Talmud Chacham has to be like the Aron. A person who is a religious, successful Jew has to be like the Aron. That you have to be Tocho Kabaro. Your insides have to parallel your outsides. Through and through. I'm a Jew through and through. Ish Yehudi Hayah B'Shushan Abira. Mordechai was a Jew through and through. You know what's funny about that Gemara? Because if you read Rashi in this week's Parsha, how is the Aron actually built? The Aron was made, Rashi says, Gimel Aronos Asa Betzalel. Betzalel actually made three boxes. And what were the three boxes? There was a gold box, then there was a wooden box, and then there was a gold box. So what does it mean that a Talmud Chacham is like the Aron? He's Tocho Kabaro. Right? You get the picture. It's gold through and through. It's not gold through and through. It's gold, and then it's wood, and then it's gold. So the tells the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Bloch, explains as follows in his Sefer Shiurei Hadas. He says, you know what it means? He says, a Talmud Chacham, a person who's a religious success, is exactly like the Aron. You have a golden idea. You have this great idea what you want to accomplish in the world. And then all of a sudden, you encounter some wood, there's a setback. So are you going to get back to gold? That's the greatest lesson you could possibly... That's the success. That's the Chafetz Chaim picking himself up after he spoke Lashon Hara, if we can imagine such a thing. That's how the Gedolim became great. Because they picked Sheva Yipol Tzadik Vakam. They knew how to pick themselves up again and again and again. And they didn't allow anything to stop them in the world. And that's what it means to be golden through and through. It doesn't mean it's going to be pure gold through and through. It's going to be gold. It's going to be wood. It's going to be gold. But you push through. And you find a way to pick yourself up again and again. And that's the essence of the Jewish people. The name that the Jewish people go by is Yisrael. That's the name that we proudly carry. It's interesting, Megillas Esther were called Yehudim. It's an unusual name. But the name that we're most commonly referred to by is the name Yisrael. Who gave us the name Yisrael? Kadosh Baruch Hu. Who else gave us the name Yisrael? A Malach that Yaakov fought against. Sarosh al Esav. When Yaakov crosses over the river, he goes back, he gets into that epic battle with Sarosh al Esav in Parshas Vayishlach. And at the end of the battle, the Malach is very impressed. Yaakov won the fight, although he's injured, but he won the fight. Vayomer, lo Yaakov ye'amer od shimcha ki'im Yisrael. I'm changing your name. You're not Yaakov anymore. You're Yisrael. Why are you called Yisrael? Ki sarisa im Elohim v'im anashim v'tuchal. Because you fought against angelic beings like myself, Sarosh al Esav, and you fought against people, and you're a person who struggled a lot, v'tuchal, and you were victorious. I once heard the following insight. I'm not sure who to attribute it to, because I never heard this b'shem anyone. If you've heard this idea, I'd like to know where it comes from. But I heard the following question. Ki sarisa im Elohim v'im anashim v'tuchal. You battled and you won. So why aren't we called something that's related to the word v'tuchal, that we won? Why is our name Yisrael, Milashon Sarisa, that we battled? And the answer is because that is the essence of the Jewish people. The courage to keep battling.
It's not about the victories. It's not always going to be victories. And we're way off if we go into it thinking it's always going to be up. That was Haman's fault. I just realized on the car ride over here. If you go back to that pasuk we quoted a few moments ago, in the sixth parak of Megillas Esther, what does Haman's wife say to him? Lo tuchalo. Because Haman's all about the victory. It's not about the struggle for Haman. Haman wants either it's perfect or it's not. And Haman couldn't accept that struggle. But for us, it's all about that struggle. In the Tanya, in the Sefer Tanya, from the Bala Tanya, or Shner Zalman of Liadi, the Sefer is called the Sefer Shel Beinonim. The story of the average Jew. The story of most of us. And he writes in the 27th parak the following. He quotes a mimer from the Zohar, which happens to be in this week's Parsha. The Zohar says, Kamo shehifli b'Zohar Parsha Shtruma, b'godol nachas ruach lefanav yisbarach, kadis kafya sitra achra letath. When a Jew pushes the Yetzer down a little bit, not destroys the Yetzer, not completely obliterates it, when the Jew is able to push the Yetzer back a little bit and say that I'm still here and I'm still fighting, that gives an achas ruach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, istalik yikar dekut shebrichu le'eila al kula. That helps kiviyachal Hashem's shechina to rise to the highest heights. It's the greatest nachas, the biggest smile in Shemayim. And he goes on and he says the following, v'lachein al yipol lev adam alav, v'lo yera levav amod. A person shouldn't get frustrated, and a person shouldn't get depressed, and a person shouldn't think that they're a failure. Gam im yeh kein kol yama v'mochama zu. If you spend your whole life fighting, you say, when's it going to end? When's the fight going to end? When's it not going to be a struggle anymore? I want to get back to that stage where I felt like I had it all figured out and everything was just so perfect. And I was exactly who I wanted to be. And now I'm balancing so many things. It's so difficult. Says the Bala Tanya, Ki ulai lakach nivra v'zos avodaso. Perhaps this is what you were created to do. And the Bala Tanya is not saying perhaps as merely a suggestion. He's saying perhaps, right, meaning get it, that this is the reality of most of you. Most of us are created as beinonim. You'll learn the whole Sefer Tanya if you want to understand the term better. But that's the idea. That a Jew is a Beinoni who's a fighter. Yisrael, Miloshon Sarisa. We're here to battle. We're here to fight. We're here to keep trying. And picking ourselves up again and again and again. It's an impossible balance. I spend my whole day trying to help people to navigate. And for myself, I'm figuring it out. We're all figuring it out. How does a person balance, on the one hand, being a person who's striving for greatness, and at the same time, being realistic? Having a healthy understanding of where we're holding. Most people either err in one way or the other. Either I decide I'm gonna, I set the bar too high in my desire to be something, and it's unsustainable. Or a person says, I'm not gonna be some great tzaddikah, so what's the point of trying? I don't have to push myself so hard. And you take the easy path. To take that balanced path, to be very realistic, to accept the fact that you're a human being with a Yetzer Hara, and yet to strive to be holy, that's the unbelievable level that Hashem wants each of us to strive for. In this past week's Parsha, the Torah describes Anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li. Anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li. The Kotzker Rebbe used to say Menshlach Helig. Menshlach means human, Helig means holy. Anshei Kodesh. Hashem doesn't need angels. Hashem doesn't need bums. Hashem needs people who are striving. That you're human, and you have shortcomings, and you have a lot of things you need to work on. But you know what? You're also Kodesh. You also believe in your essential greatness. You can become something so great. And most people either, again, try to become too great, too fast, or they just give up. They decide it's not worth it. They decide that, why bother struggling? Shlomo HaMelech says in Koheles, Al tihit tzadik harbe. It's a funny sentence, no? I would think, the firmer I can be, the better. Al tihit tzadik harbe. A person has to know their level. A person has to proceed in a way that's healthy and appropriate for a person. We know that on the night of Yom Kippur, when the Neilah is finally said and done, the greatest moments of the year, screaming, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Hu Elokim, a person's on such a high. So all the Sfarim ask, right after Yom Kippur, all of a sudden, we start to daven Maariv. And how does Maariv begin? V'hu rachum yichaper avon. Hashem, please forgive my averos. And then we daven Shmona Esrei, Slach Lanu. What's going on? The Chiddush Arim, the first Ger Rebbe, Rebbe Yitzchak Gavorki, all the Sfarim are asking. All the Sefer Chassidus are asking. What's the nature? What are we clapping Al-Khayt? Didn't we do enough Al-Khayt over the course of the day? What are we asking forgiveness for? So I thought of a pshat recently, and maybe you'll think I'm a heretic for suggesting this, but I think it's an emistic pshat. A person comes out of Yom Kippur, you're on such a high, you're angelic, clean slate, and a few seconds ago, what were you saying to Hashem? What was the conversation by Ne'ilah? Hashem, this year, perfect. Every time I bench, I'm going to bench out of a bencher. And I'm going to say every word with kavana. I'm never going to say an Asher Yotzer without kavana. And when it comes to davening, every day I'm not going to miss a tefillah. And I'm going to learn Torah every day. And I know this past year I spoke a lot of Lashon Hara, but you'll never hear a word of Lashon Hara from me again. And a person comes out of Yom Kippur on Mamash, a great high. What does Hashem do as a gift to us? Hashem brings us down just a notch. And Hashem says, Slach lanu, you're still human. Right now you're perfect. And Hashem is, trust me, He's rooting for us. We should stay angelic. We should never do another Aveira. But Hashem says, let me help bring you back to a healthy dose of reality. You'll be a much healthier Jew if you know that things aren't going to be perfect. That's the world of Haman. That's the world of Amalek. That's the world of a person who falls and falls apart. When a person comes out of Yom Kippur, again, there's an unrealistic high. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, let's approach this. Strive for great. Be Kodesh, but be Anshei Kodesh. Be Menshlach and be Helik. Be human and be holy at exactly the same time. Ki Sarisa. Keep battling. Like the Baal HaTanya said, that's what most of us were created to do. And I don't want you to walk out of here, we only have a few minutes left, I don't want you to walk out of this room thinking that this is just a Hasidish idea. You know, I quoted a lot of Sefer Chassidim, this is a Jewish idea. Ki Sarisa, Yisrael, this is our name. This is what the Jewish people are all about. There's a very strong statement that the Nesivos Shalom brings in the first volume from the Kobrin, or Moshe of Kobrin. Kobrin is one of the early tzaddikim from which the Slonim dynasty comes from. In the Nesivos Shalom, in the Aleph volume, he brings an amazingly strong comment from Moshe of Kobrin. He says, a person who does the biggest aveira in the world, right, which of course none of us are going to do, but a person who fell, let's say they fell into something really bad, and they're really upset at themselves. If you can't go right after doing that aveira, and go daven a mincha, and daven a shmona esrei with kavana, if you can't pick yourself and daven with kavana, says the Kobrin, then you don't know the first thing about Yiddishkeit. You don't know anything about Judaism. Because that's what Yiddishkeit's about. Lo darchu raglav al mifsan hayadus. You haven't even stepped on the threshold of what it means to be a Jew. Because a Jew is born to struggle. A Jew is born to fight. A Jew is born to keep trying. A Jew understands that the world was created through bona olamos u'machriva. And that the Mishkan was built and taken apart by Moshe Rabbeinu. And it had to be that way. It had to be that way for the Avodah to be acceptable in such a place. That's the reality of our world. That's how it always was. And that's how it is. And again, the more we accept that, the more we become aware and comfortable with that reality, not in a way that we give up on ourselves, but in a healthy and balanced way, the better we'll be, the more successful we'll be. The more balanced we'll be able to come out of that Yom Kippur in a way that we're actually going to make changes in our life, because we're doing it at the right pace. We're doing it in the right way. I want to share just one final Purim thought, which I hope will really resonate with you. We know from the Tikkuni Zohar that Purim in some ways is the greatest holiday of all. That Purim is even greater than Yom Kippur. The Tikkuni Zohar writes in Tikkun Chaf Aleph that Purim is like Yom HaKippurim. But the Svarim say, which one is the bigger one? Mi nitla b'mi, like it says in the Gemara in Tanis. Which one is dependent upon the other? Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur. It's a day that's like Purim. Which means that Yom Kippur is sort of the minor holiday compared to Purim, which is the major holiday. How could that be? How could it be that Purim is in fact greater than Yom Kippur? So I'll share with you another mimer from Rav Kotner in the Pasuk Yiddish. And this one comes from the Purim volume in the back. There are Rishimos, they're written in Yiddish. With the help of a friend that was able to translate it, I'm not going to try to read it to you in the Yiddish because I don't want to embarrass myself. But he says an amazing thing. Rav Kotner says, there's a Pasuk in Tehillim. The Pasuk says, Ata Moshel Begeyes Hayam Biso Galov Atatish Abchem. Tehillim Peites. Ata Moshel Begeyes Hayam. Hashem, you are Moshel. You rule over the Geyes Hayam, the grandeur of the sea. You rule over the ocean. Biso galav, when the waves rise up, atot tishabchem. You, what's tishabchem? So you're going to say it sounds like a lashon of shevach, to praise. It actually means in this context, you quiet them down. Hashem, you rule over the waves. The waves raise themselves up, and you quiet them down. It says therefore there, why would Tehillim use the word tishabchem, a lashon of shevach, of praise, for a wave that's being quieted down? Why are we praising the wave for being quieted down? Our footer gives a beautiful, beautiful explanation. He says, picture a wave. A wave out at the ocean, right? And it rises itself up. And it's bigging itself up bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's rising and it's rising and it's racing towards the shore. And for a moment it looks like it's going to conquer the whole world. And what happens when it hits the shore? What happens as it gets to the edge? It comes crashing down. Completely, completely destroyed. Crashes down. What does the wave do? What does the water do? It gets sucked back out to sea, and it tries again, and it picks itself up again. Ata Moshel Begeyes Hayam, Hashem, you rule over the waves, but you know what? That wave that you are Tisha B'chem, that you quiet down, Hashem, you have a silent praise, so to speak, for that wave. Hashem, you're very impressed by the courage of the wave to try again and again and again. And Rav Kotner was sitting by his Purim table. You can imagine the end of the day, picture the scene. A very drunken Rav Kotner, but in a holy way. And Rav Kotner turned to the Talmidim and he said, this is what Purim's about. When we come out of other Yom Tovim, we want to stay on the high. When a person comes out of Pesach, Lamashal, so you want to take a little Cheiros with you.
When you come out of Shavuos, you want to take a little Kabbalah Satorah with you. When you come out of Rosh Hashanah, you want to have a little Yira. When you come out of Yom Kippur, you want to have a little Simcha. You want to take it with you. You carry it with you throughout the year. You come out of Sukkot, you want to take a little Simcha with you. What happens when you come out of Purim? You take Purim with you, or you don't take Purim with you? There's only one day a year where you can look up in shul in the middle of davening, and the person next to you is dressed like a bear davening Shmoneh Esrei, and it's totally normal. There's nothing strange about that. But if it happened on any other day of the week, you'd probably be a little, you know, a little nervous about such a thing, right? We don't take Purim with us, and yet says a foot in there. What do we do on Purim though? Knowing that Purim can't last, knowing like the wave it's going to crash, it cannot last. Says a foot in there. As long as I'm sitting by the Purim table, I will storm, I will rage. I'll be like those ocean waves. The praise of the wave that picks itself up again and again. And I think based on this piece of Pachad Yitzchak, I'd like to suggest why it is that Purim in some ways is greater than Yom Kippur. You know why? Because a person comes out of Yom Kippur, and they're shtickel bal dimyon. You think, I'm a totally new person, everything has changed, I'm going to take it with me and it's never going to stop, and right? It's unrealistic. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Slach lanu, v'hu rachum, you're not an angel yet. Right now you have a clean slate, but you're still a human being. There's an aspect of Yom Kippur that's in a beautiful way, unrealistic. What about Purim? What makes Purim greater than Yom Kippur? Purim is entirely realistic. You know what it's going to be when you enter it, and you know what it's going to be when you walk out of it. And you leave a lot of it behind. But you keep trying. And you, Purim, you give it your all. As long as I'm sitting by my table, says Rav Huttner, Ich bin storm, I'm going to storm, I'm going to rage, I'm going to do whatever I can to be the best I can be, knowing that it's unsustainable. Because that's the nature of the Jewish people. Not to fall into that trap of Haman, who again is only satisfied with perfection. I want to conclude with a beautiful thought that I saw in a biography. They put out a sefer, Rav Lezer Geldzahler. Rav Lezer Geldzahler, I don't know if anyone saw this book, it's been in the Judaica stores. It's a beautiful book. Reb Lezer was a very special individual, a very unique personality, a person who was a blend of many different things. And this Reb Lezer Geldzahler, unfortunately, lost his life in a very tragic way. There was a terrible bus accident, and he was badly injured, and unfortunately, he never recovered. And he saved many other people, and he grabbed hold of the steering wheel, and the bus driver fell asleep. He was a big tzaddik. And there's many, many stories throughout the book that I could share to give you a glimpse of who he was. But he says such a beautiful idea on these parshas. He says, why is it that you need Vayakal Pekudei? Vayakal Pekudei is basically just a rerun of Truma Tetzava. As we enter these parshas, we're preparing for Purim. What's the message? And he says the following. Truma Tetzava, a person goes and you build the Mishkan, you build the Kalim, and everything's so perfect and so beautiful. And then you come to Parshas Kisisa, and what happens? Chayra Egel. And everything's ruined. Says the Torah, Vayakal Pekudei, build the Mishkan again. Build the Mishkan again. That's how the Mishkan was built the first time, that's how it's going to be built every time. That you're going to mess up, and there's going to be setbacks, but be courageous. Build the Mishkan again. Don't let Chayra Egel destroy you. Don't let that setback stop you. Don't be like Haman who says it's all or nothing. It doesn't have to be that way. Be a balanced Jew. Mensch L'chelik. Be someone who's striving for greatness, and yet at the same time, thoroughly realistic about the world in which we live. So Amir Tzashem, we should all be Zocha. As we try to build that Olam Katan inside of ourselves, and as we build that Mishkan inside of ourselves, Hashem wants to dwell inside of ourselves. Amir Tzashem, we should approach it in a way that's very lofty and very holy, and at the same time, thoroughly realistic. And Amir Tzashem, through that, we'll understand this message of Purim, to not be like Amalek, to not be like Haman, who said it's all or nothing. Amir Tzashem, we should be balanced Jews, healthy Jews, and through that rebuilding of that Mishkan inside of ourselves, we'll be zochet to see the building of the Beis HaMikdash.